We all know the big game can get pretty unpredictable, which is why you need a connection that is anything but to watch it. With the Xfinity 10G network, you get the reliable connection you need to stream your favorite sports, from football to football, everything in between. Catch it all on the network made for streaming. Treat yourself to front row seats to all the games and get way more into all the sports you're into when you stream on the next generation Xfinity 10G network.
To the Kane Collects podcast, and last episode was kind of just an intro to what this podcast is going to be about. And at the end of the episode, I teased I was going to have a guest, and kind of like I teased him as I hope he doesn't get too shy here as a hobby heavyweight here in the industry. A lot of people know who he is, and if you don't know who he is one of the guys that kind of well-known collectors, investors that everyone knows about and knows a ton of knowledge in this industry and this hobby, and not just cards but other collectibles, and we'll ask him about that. And I want to introduce Jason Kuntz, the owner, CEO of Utia Sports. Jason, thanks for joining me, man.
Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate you. It was good seeing you this week, and I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. It's always good to see you. And actually, because for people, they don't know this, but we ran into each other, ironically at a card show, unannounced or anything. You're just kind of, want to hit up a show with your kids. And I happened to be set up helping out a friend of mine. And you walk through and stuff, and I mean, you get a great deal. And I'm like, man, if all people that doesn't need a great deal, it's this guy. And I mean, come on. And so, I mean, you're always buying, of course. You pick up anything cool lately, by the way?
We're always buying. I mean, at that show, I bought a Gretzky rookie, just totally, like literally went to the card show with my kids and, stumbled upon a Gretzky rookie. So it's an addiction. And, I bought a, we have a bunch of collections that are always, through email or phone calls. And we actually had a couple come to the office yesterday and sell us a vintage collection that had some 1914 Cracker Jacks with the Ty Cobb. So like every day is a very interesting, like what's going to walk through the door type of feel.
That's awesome. Because like I said, I teased a guest, that was been in this industry for a long time and started from the bottom and is now like basically at the top. And that's why I kind of want you to let people know about when and why did you start collecting and how did you get where you are today? I mean, let's start with, like I said, the when and why. Why did you start collecting and when?
Oh, man, dude. Like the same as everybody else. Like, 10, 11 years old, going to the local card shop, ripping packs. For me, in my scenario, it was like the whole Shaq craze. Like I totally remember just being in awe of Shaq. And it was like, that was the beginning for me. And then the next year with Hardaway, and I'm a big basketball guy. I know you're a big basketball guy and football guy. The Chris Webber, that Hardaway, Grant Hill, that early 90s basketball, just fell in love with it. So obviously, young kid, didn't have a bunch of money, mowed lawns, shoveled snow, did everything you could to go and rip packs and do all that. It's way different than it is today with everything online and stuff. You actually had to physically go to your local card shop for card show and buy the packs. And, and then it kind of just went from that of just a hobby fun to, wait, you can actually make some money, flipping stuff in this. So when a lot of friends kind of ventured off into getting their dishwashing job or wherever they went, I started just doing more card shows and flipping deals. And, really it was taking dollar cards, selling them for $2. And then over the years, you kind of graduate to, $10 cards to 20. And now today, we spend a lot of money and, it's the same principles as, buying a dollar and turn it to two. It's just on a different scale now.
Yeah, just a bigger scale. So like, as you alluded to, you're a kid and you found out like, well, I can make some money doing this. But back then it's like maybe money just to buy more cards and have more fun. When did you think like, and know like, hey, this could be a career. This could be something I do for the rest of my life. Or, this is fun. I want to keep doing this and make money at the same time.
Yeah. At a pretty young age, actually. I remember it pretty vividly. I was set up at, Philadelphia Sports Fest in like 1996. And, and I'm like 15, 16 years old. I'm young. And PSA, one of the biggest authenticator at the time, they were coming booth to booth, trying to convince people why they should grade sports cards, which is pretty wild considering, during COVID, it was like a 2-year wait, so we've been in a 25-year span, we've gone from the grading company trying to convince you why you should grade to a 2-year wait. And so in the very early stages of grading, the beginning, a lot of the old time dealers are like, screw you. I don't need, you know, who do I need to, you know, I don't need you to tell me what my cards are. And they just didn't understand it. And me being young, it's like, it's almost like being early on crypto or being early on the internet. I kind of bought in it and thought this grading thing was going to be the next big thing. And it was. So when Kobe came into the league and like then Tiger Woods and golf took off, I was already, you know, hooked on this, on the grading process and submitting a lot of cards. And, you know, throughout my high school years, I was, you know, submitting tens of thousands of cards a month to PSA. And at the time, and then Beckett eventually launched their grading services, I think in 99 or 2000, you know, for all that. But it was just being in the right place at the right time, having the passion, and, you know, it was kind of everything, you know, catching lightning all at the right time. And, yeah, I hit a pretty good run.
Yeah, I mean, because I'm sure at the time, I mean, you're 15, 16 years. You were set up at that card show. Were you selling or did you just go to buy or for fun?
Yeah, so back then, like, basically, I'm lucky to have a really cool mom who, like, just trusted me. Like, I helped out with the bills and, you know, I didn't grow up with a lot of money. So, you know, I had a lot of friends that were 17, 18 that could drive. Yeah, so this show, I think I was probably 15 in 96, whatever that was. Boy, no, so 96, I'm 14. So if I'm 14 at this show.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So I had a friend who actually lived in Chicago that I'd met in the card world had drove and picked me up. And basically the deal was, it's always nice to have extra help, you know, at a table. And if I would kind of help out, he usually give me like a free table or not, sorry, not a free table, a free showcase. And then usually throw me like $50 to help out for the weekend. And that was kind of my, you know, for me, it was like, oh, I get to go to Philadelphia for free. I get a free showcase at this table. Like maybe I can sell some stuff.
And, you know, cards and all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's like all those stories of, I remember going to a show in Boston, and for Boston, you know, it's like a 15, 16 hour drive. And the only way for me to get there was a group of guys that had actually a card show down, Kevin Savage down in Toledo. So I had my mom drive me to Toledo, and then I had to sit on a milk crate in the back. So there was no seats because it was two seats and then all the cards in the back. So I'm sitting on a milk crate for 15, 16 hours there and back to, you know, make $100 for the weekend. And at the time that was amazing. Learned a lot from some of the other hobby older guys, the pioneers and stuff. And, yeah, it's just like, it was just such a, you know, and honestly, the same thing I would say then is, and now is I do pretty well now, but like, even if I didn't do well now, I would still do what I do. Like the money's a bonus. I'm not going to, like, obviously money's amazing, but if I was making, you know, $22,000 a year doing what I do now, I would still do it because I don't feel like I'm working and I just have such a passion for it. And it's like, every time I think back to, you know, if you were to talk to your previous self at a, you know, at 12 or 13 years old and say, hey, you know, when you're 40, you're going to be buying and selling baseball cards for a living. It's like, obviously, you know, you wouldn't really believe that to be a reality. And the fact that it is pretty amazing.
That is amazing. I mean, like, you're kind of living the dream for a lot of collectors. You know, this is, I think, like, I consider you like kind of like the 1%, like the pros. If you're a kid growing up, you want to play sports, but only like the 1% even to have a sniff at, you know, being pro. And I'm not talking like you're the peak. I mean, of course you could you can set up at a card show or maybe even own a card shop one day or whatever. But I think you've gone like beyond that. When you were like 14 years old, 15 years old, and you're at this card show, and you know, I'm imagining you're surrounded like a lot of older guys that have been selling cards for a long time, and they weren't buying the grading idea. And for some reason, you were convinced, or you saw the, you know, hey, this is going to be a good idea. You could have been bamboozled at the time. We never know where grading could have gone, but I mean, we know where it is now. But it's just amazing that you're like, you know what? Yeah, this is a good idea, and you're grading that many cards at that age. I mean, you did the math and it worked out. You know, a lot of this is math anyways. So What do you have advice wise for someone who, because nowadays it is a lot about the money for some people. I mean, for me, I'm just a true collector. I just collect, you know, IPC Jordan, and I'll pick up other stuff every now and then, but, and I may sell other stuff, but like I've told people many times, it's more just to feed my Jordan addiction and things like that. And it's not my income. What do you tell someone right now who's looking to jump into the collecting world, whether they want to be a collector or make this a career? What kind of advice do you have for those, the people?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, number one, you know, just listen, you know, just take in a lot. There's so much content out there now, you know, it's a lot of bad, but there's still a lot of good content out there. Like I wouldn't just jump in crazy. I would learn and, you know, start off small. Like it's okay to, you just see so much bullshit online. It's just, everyone wants to be the big dog and all this big money. Like there's so many cool cards that are like, you know, 5, 10, 20 bucks. Like you don't need to like jump into this like crazy arena of 10, 20, 50, 100,000 cards. So like learn the business, you know, spend a year or two, like there's just so much to take in. You know, get advice. A lot of the older dealers like are happy to help people out. Like when people message me, like if I have time, like I love, like if I'm in the airport, you know, going through Instagram and just answering a bunch of messages and you know, helping people out. But I think just take it slow, take in a lot of content, like learn, like know that you don't have to be, you know, you don't have to go buy a Jordan 10. Like you can, you know, you can work your way up. There's plenty of time. Like for me, it's like people see where I'm at now. And like, there's some jealousy sometimes and there's different things, but you know, and cause there's a lot of people that came into the hobby pre-COVID, like, you know, 2019. And like, they don't understand that I've been in this for 25 years. So it's just the relationships and like, there's just so much time that was put in and like, there really is no easy path, like in anything. So, you know, I know a year, 2, 3 years sounds like a lot of time, but if it's something you really want to do, you know, and I have a lot of younger guys that work for me that are in their early 20s and, you know, they want it now. And I just can't stress to them enough. I'm telling them like, guys, enjoy the journey. Like if I could go back, one of the things I would do more is enjoy the journey. Cause I was really focused on making a lot of money and I kind of got caught up in that and I took a lot of, you know, in my 20s, I didn't do a lot of stuff because I was so focused on work. And if I could go back and talk to I would say, hey, the money's great. The money will come, but like enjoy the fact that you're traveling around the country and going to card shows and like living a kid's dream and take that in and enjoy it. And like, you know, yes, there's stressful moments.
Kind of remember why you got into it in the first place. It was fun, right? Like you want to
100%. Yeah. 100%. Like, you know, we all get stressed. We get stressed in business, but it's like, I try to, even now, like when I get stressed and take a step back and be like, you know, this is what we're doing. This is not rocket science. It's baseball cards. So, anytime I do that, it brings me back and grounds me to like how awesome this is, you know, as a career.
Yeah. Because I mean, as you mentioned, there is a lot of BS out there and there, you know, how social media influencers, doesn't matter if it's pop culture or cards, that people are putting content out there just to put content out there. Like it's, I think for like someone who's getting back into it or a newer collector, that's going to be hard for them maybe to sift through what's real, what's not. And I think that don't go beyond your means, you know, like you said, it's okay to start small, because I've already heard the post pandemic, some guys that have like spent way too much that, you know, now they're, you know, in debt and whatnot, or spend way too much on cards. You probably saw the price of cards and were like, this is ridiculous. Like, you know, so
it was wild. Yeah. It just didn't feel real. A lot of us, we kind of like got caught up in like, it was just really weird times. And it's like, you know, going back to, you know, now that we're able to go back to shows and stuff, it's like there's less downside to it, the cheaper stuff. Like, and honestly, it's easier. It's a whole lot easier to double a $10 investment and flip for 20 than it is to like buy a deal for 50 grand, sell for 100 grand. So like, if you have very minimal bankroll, like messing around in that, you know, $5 to $20, $30 range, I love it personally. Like if I get a moment, like, you know, I go to shows, a lot of people want to chat with me and stuff. And I don't have time to do what I was once able to do. But like, if I had my choice, you saw me at that show, I had a hoodie on. I did not want to be recognized. All I wanted to do is be with my kids and go through dollar boxes and just be, you know, in my element. And I still like, that's what I would do to like at the national, nationally, you came to our booth and we chatted there. I didn't have like a free moment. It was crazy. But all I wanted to do was like buy cards over the table and just, you know, be a dealer and have fun. It's harder to do that now because it's gotten so crazy. But, you know, that's just, there's just so much fun in all that.
Yeah. You mentioned like the $10, $20 cards. I think like when you look at bigger cards, even if it's $100, $200, $500, thousands of dollars, I feel like there's no value anymore. The price is kind of built into the card. Like, let's just talk like Trevor Lawrence or even worst case scenario, Mac Jones right now. Okay. That was going crazy a while ago. Like, you're buying a guy who basically his resume is I've won 3 Super Bowls. I've made this many Pro Bowls, but he hasn't yet. And so, you know, people are spending money, big money on this, and they're not going to get the return on it. And if it is a return, it's minimal. It's not like you said, doubling your money on it. So my question basically to you is, what do you think of the current state of the hobby and collecting cards right now? I know there's like a lot more people involved, but it's a good and a bad thing. But yeah, what do you think of the current state?
So, I mean, 80% of what I have is vintage. I'm a big vintage guy. There's just not a lot of it out there compared to some of the modern stuff. Like when I see the Desmond Ritters and the Sam Howells and like, you know, it scares me that some of these prices, like you can go buy a really good Drew Brees or Peyton Manning or Tom Brady for the same amount, where it's just like, oh my God, that doesn't even make sense. And I actually made a post like a few weeks ago that said, just so you guys know, like the reality is in 5 years from now, some of these $30,000 cards are going to be $100. And a lot of people haven't lived through that yet. I've lived through it 3 or 4 times now. You know, I remember, you know, they're back up a little bit now, but there was a point in the late 90s where some Kobe 10s were selling for 10, 20, 30,000 and got down to like $30, $40.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, I've seen like Vince Carter, you know, still a great player.
Yeah.
One that really jumps out that like a lot of people listening might not even remember the name. I remember selling Dante Culpepper PSA 10 SP Authentics for $5,000 to $6,000 a piece. And he was a hot prospect quarterback. And those are like $15 to $20 now. So, you know, that's a huge reality.
Well, that's the thing. Like prospecting, it used to be fun and can still be fun, but it's like, I feel like it's almost priced out of prospecting now. If a guy wants a Sam Howell or a Desmond Ritter, why am I going to pay the same price as I'm paying for a Peyton Manning who's actually done something in his career, who's a Hall of Famer? Does it make sense? Or is this, do you think it comes back down somewhat? Like I said, I feel like it's already priced into the card where it's not even prospecting anymore.
It definitely feels like a lot of the upside's already built in. But listen, like I'm guilty of this too, pretty bad. You know, like my first really bad bust was Matt Cassel in 2005 when Brady went down. I thought Brady was just a product of a system. Clearly, we know now he wasn't. So I dumped like 300,000 in Matt Cassel cards that are now used as coffee coasters. I won't sell them; like they're just part of my collection. So like I thought I learned my lesson there. And then like one of my bigger investments and what I thought was my safest investment is like, I have the biggest Andrew Luck collection in the world. And like, to me, Andrew Luck was like the perfect, and I put, you know, I don't know, 500,000 or 600,000 in Andrew Luck. That's now same thing. They're worth, you know, I mean, he's better than Matt Cassel, but my thought process was, if Andrew Luck wins a Super Bowl and if multiple Super Bowls, like I thought it was going to be a 10X investment. And he was a number one pick. He was just like a really thorough, like he reminded me like of the next Peyton Manning. Like he was the guy. And I honestly think if he didn't just retire out of nowhere, you know, he had the upside to do that. So that's a crazy one that I never even put on my radar as a player just up and retiring out of nowhere. So that definitely kind of threw me off. But and even me, like, not that I'm, you know, I do this professionally and I'm an expert and I win more than I lose, but I've taken some massive losses and I try to preach to people, like, just know that that is a reality of what can happen in this game is, you know, you can, you know, you might lose more than half, like you might lose 99% of your investment on some stuff. Now you're probably not going to, you know, lose that on a Jordan rookie or a Gretzky rookie, but you know, some of these newer guys, if they end up, you know, like Mac Jones has not looked great, you know, lately. It's like he's, And people are very easily forgotten. Like the other day I had asked, like, where's Trey Lance? Trey Lance is in Dallas. You know, I just found that out the other day. Like he's the backup in Dallas. And, you know, 4 or 5 months ago, his cards were $50,000. So I don't know. It's just be really careful is the advice. You know, it's, And honestly, even there's some massive sales with Joe Burrow, and like Joe Burrow just had his first good game of the season. So, you know, maybe like it's an opportunity to buy Joe Burrow now, like with the fact that he kind of started slow and his prices have dipped. So it's with the newer stuff, it's definitely more volatile, and which could be good for quick spikes and flips when players get hot. Personally, I like the safer, slow and steady, you know, the older and more rare it is, the stuff that's less traded is more where I like to play these days.
Yeah, I don't think vintage gets enough love, actually. I know there's obviously really expensive vintage cards, but it's definitely less volatile, like you said, and it's, you know, it's a safer investment if you want to go out that way. And always remind people that, I mean, that's if you want to make this your career and be an investor or whatnot. There is nothing wrong with staying as a collector and collecting stuff that you love, because if you collect stuff you love, you can't go wrong, because you if you love that card or that player, you're going to keep it anyways. You're, for the most part, you know, you're going to keep it in your collection. You'll always love looking at it. I mean, I don't sell a ton of Jordan stuff because I collect it. I mean, I'll sell doubles and things like that. And I think everyone has their price at some point. If it's just too, you know, makes too much sense to sell it, then yeah, go ahead, you know, and I'll do that too. I'm not immune to that, but I was just remind people, collect, remember why you started, and then you won't be able to, you won't go wrong. So before go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, no, I definitely have two versions of myself as well. But investor, you know, buy, sell, got to make money. And then I have like my whole PC that I definitely get caught up in bidding wars where I know I'm overpaying and I just don't care, because, you know, I went back and rebought all the 90s basketball stuff as a kid that I could never afford, that was just like dreamy. And, you know, now that I have a little bit to buy, like I went back and bought the refractor sets and the chrome refractor sets and some of the credentials and the rubies and the autographics and all that stuff that was unobtainable. And yeah, when I see it and I haven't seen it for a while, I'm like, yeah, I'm buying that. I don't care if I overpay, because it's going in a binder and it's, you know, going to get passed down to my kids so they can, you know, experience the same thing that I did.
Yeah. Because I mean, like it's when you're younger, a $500 card might as well be $1 million card, you know, and or something that was like a crazy pack pull that you never thought you could open up yourself and get it. And you see it as an adult and you're like, I can get this, and it takes you back to a happy place. I think you see me right now. I mean, people are listening on the podcast, but we're looking at each other on a video call. I'm in an area where I can just sit down and like look at cars and just relax. You know, we both got young kids, we got wives and families, and sometimes you just want to just get your mind, you know, kind of zen for a little bit. And just, and when I look at cards, I can do that where I, you know, not worried about anything.
Or like go rip an old product, you know, like pull a box out from 93, 94 and open some packs. It's I've done that with my kids a lot, like ripping stuff that I used to rip, and you know, bringing you back to that era is definitely
at that show you saw me at, I actually ended up picking up a box of Top Stadium Club Basketball 1992-93 Series 2. I'm looking at it right now. It's the Beam Team. For those that don't remember, you can get Jordan Beam Team, Shaq Beam Team. I'm going to rip it. I'm going to put it on YouTube and I'm going to be happy about it. And I'm probably not going to get a Jordan Beam Team out of it, but you know what? I'm going to have a lot of fun opening up those packs. So
I love that. Yeah. It's a gorgeous set. I have a lot of Shaq Beam Teams. I was buying them for like 5 or 6 years. I would buy every single one I seen. So I just think that's Shaq's best rookie. You know, Shaq, there weren't, you know, like numbered inserts in that era yet. So his best rookie is that Beam Team. And it's just, you know, Shaq's like the most dominating player of all time in a certain era. You know, that 2000 to 2003 Lakers team was just insane. So
this is almost like another topic. And when I'm going to have you on more than once, but I feel Shaq might be the most undervalued athlete in sports card in like history. Like, I can't believe how undervalued he is for how dominant, like you said, he was. He's a winner and he's a pop culture icon. People know him to this day still, like Jordan. You know, Shaq's in every commercial, he's on TV, and he's a fraction of the cost of some of these other players.
We could have an entire hour podcast about why Shaq is undervalued. Like, yeah, I mean, we'll save that for another one, but it's insane how dominant he was. And with all that, like his personality, his kindness is like larger than life.
Shaq.
Yeah. I mean, he changed the NBA after Jordan and Magic. And I mean, it's like, yeah, we could go on forever about him, but that's a whole podcast talking about Shaq.
One more thing before I let you go. What are you collecting besides cards, man? Anything else? Because this is a podcast about all collectibles, and that's why I'm going to have you on again, because I want to talk other collectibles with you. What else are you collecting?
Oh, man, I'm addicted, you know. So, yeah, because cards is, like, I guess, you know, my main business, what gets me, the way that you kind of, like, geek out and your escape is to sit down with cards. I have that feeling, too. But, like, for me, I've been really big into sealed video games. That's, like, really brought me back. So, like, when I pull out a sealed Mario, it doesn't need to be sealed either. I just love, like, the cartridge in the box of, like, a Super Mario 3 or, you know, some of the games that I played as a kid, like, that really is my happy place. I've been, you know, investing a lot into that. And then in the memorabilia side, like, I collect checks. So initially, several years ago, I made a list of 300 names, you know, the Beatles, John Lennon, Elvis Presley, Marilyn Monroe, all the presidents, and started just checking off, you know, on this list, Bruce Lee, you know, and I started buying doubles, and it's like become an obsession of checks. So I think it's so cool. And then the other thing on the checks is, like, it adds another layer of authenticity because, you know, it's less likely that it's going to be a fake autograph on a check. And then it's like, what is the check made out to? You know, it's like you can kind of, it's dated and look at the experience. And I don't know, it's just this weird rabbit hole that you can go down to. And you know, so that's one of my big things is checks of famous people and then in video games outside of sports cards.
It sounds like two more podcasts I could have you on. And then plus the Shaq Undervalue podcast. But man, thanks for joining me. As always, we'll talk again for sure. Hey, people, if you like the podcast, please subscribe and download. It helps a lot. Tell your friends, tell your family. I don't even care if you listen. Just download the podcast. No, but please do listen. And as always, keep collecting.